Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 120, recorded Wednesday, September 18th, 2013. Our guest is Ariel Waldman. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/triangulation. That's LYNDA.com/triangulation. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/triangulation. That's tonks.org/triangulation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a fantastic episode of Triangulation. Do not adjust your screens. I am not Leo Laporte. I'm Sarah Lane filling in for Leo, who is on what looks like already on the social networks a really lovely vacation already. I haven't been on Triangulation in quite a while, so I'm really excited that I'm filling in again. And I'm especially excited because our guest, Ariel Waldman, you have so much going on that there's no way we're going to get to all of it in an hour. But I'm going to do my best to get through the good stuff. And before the show started, I said, well, what do you want to be introduced as? What's your like main title? And that's a hard answer, isn't it?
Yes, I really don't know how to describe myself. I'm quite miserable at it.
So. So you said, and we see in your lower third that spacehack.org is something that you've created. So for anybody who just has no idea what that means, Spacehack, has never been to the website, has never participated in anything. What is it? Why did you start it? And what's the mission?
Yeah, so spacehack.org is a directory of ways for anyone with or without a science background to actively contribute to space exploration. So this is anything from building robots that might one day go to Mars to discovering galaxies that no one's discovered before, a variety of different types of things for different types of interests. And I created it because I very serendipitously and unexpectedly in my life got a job at NASA a few years ago, and I kind of came to the realization that I could contribute to space exploration without having previously really known it. So since then, I just want to tell other people that you can actually do things in space exploration without necessarily going back to school for it.
So most people who end up working for NASA don't say, it's just something that sort of happened by accident.
Right.
So what was the situation? I mean, how did that come to be?
It was something where I was sitting at home. This was 2008, so not too long ago, about 5 years ago. And I was watching this documentary called When We Left Earth, and it was this awesome documentary about NASA in the 1950s and 1960s, figuring out how to do space. And while watching this documentary, I kind of realized that NASA in the early days kind of wasn't run by the rocket scientists that everyone always thinks of. They were still figuring out how to do space exploration. They didn't know much about like orbits or spacecrafts or much of anything. And they were, you know, launching all these rockets, and like 30 to 40% of the rockets were bursting into flames and failing and just not working. And I was watching this going like, well, I don't know anything about space exploration. I want to work at NASA. That sounds awesome. And so I decided, since I had recently moved to San Francisco, to randomly send someone at NASA an email saying that I was like a fan of what they were doing, and if they ever needed someone like myself, that, you know, I was around. And very randomly, I got an email back that day saying that they had just created a job description for a new role, and it kind of read like my resume. They wanted someone with design and marketing skills, and someone outside of NASA, and someone sort of more connected to the startup scene in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so I applied and I got the job. And but prior to that, I had never really considered anything in science or space ever. I was mostly focused in design.
And you were really inspired by this documentary.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I don't know. When I still watch it, I love it so much.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just a great series of interviews with people who were at NASA during the early days. And they were very honest. And the average age at NASA in the 60s was 26 or so. So it kind of felt like these were a bunch of kids like being thrown into like, okay, like, how are we going to get a person into space? And they had to figure it out. And I think that message was a lot more empowering than the NASA knows what they're doing at all times sort of message that sometimes gets out there.
You mentioned 2008. You're sort of, you watch this documentary. You're kind of in a different field. You think, oh, I could do something different. You and I met through the startup scene. I guess yeah. You could call it the San Francisco sort of the greater social / startup scene. And yeah, I mean, I don't remember us ever talking about space.
No.
Is this something that you sort of secretly always really liked, or did you not even realize that this was ever an option for you?
Honestly, I never really realized it. I think a lot of people assume that I was a kid who grew up like loving space exploration and being obsessed with NASA, and that's just not true. I thought, you know, learning new things was cool, sure, but I really didn't have much interest in science or space beyond just watching, you know, science documentaries on the weekends, and that's mostly because I was a nerd. That's why I always say it was very unexpected, because it's not really something I sat down to pursue. I unexpectedly got this job, and it completely changed my life and my focus. And I don't know, I'm just really excited about space ever since. And so for me, I accidentally found my calling, I guess.
That's wonderful. So, okay, so you get hired by NASA, and what's the job? What is the role that was so perfect for you?
It was working for a program called CoLab, and CoLab was a program ran out of NASA Ames, which really sought to connect communities inside and outside of NASA to collaborate. So getting amateur astronomers to collaborate with astronomers inside NASA, getting the startup scene more exposed to people at NASA and ideas and sort of co-working and sort of just facilitating lots of collaboration and lots of opening up data within NASA programs and so on. So it was this great program. I loved my team, and it was really awesome. The only unfortunate thing was that the program ran out of funding a few months afterwards, and so that's when I ended up creating spacehack.org.
So Spacehack, it sounds like it's really kind of an extension of what the NASA program set out to do. This is, if you're just looking at the front page, there are all sorts of really interesting projects that you've linked to and people can find out more about. How difficult was it to just know about all of this stuff? I assume you probably have some great RSS feeds for science and space now, but how did it start?
A lot of it was because when I was working at NASA, I had heard of different projects like these where they would have university students building Mars rovers or people being able to classify galaxies and a variety of different projects. And not all of them, but some of them definitely were just, they were kind of typical government-run projects where they were really interesting, but they were really hard to find. They were written in language that was hard to understand unless you were already fairly space savvy. And so I at least learned of a small group of them while I was working at NASA. And so that's what sort of inspired me to create Spacehack, was essentially just creating a more accessible way to know about all of these projects in one easy place. And then since then, yeah, there's just tons of space projects out there. And I don't know, it's just been amazing to see more projects emerge over time.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had heard of many of these projects that seem very, very cool, but I don't know where else I would go. I guess there really does need to be a directory. Do you find that there are other directories like this that you've heard about, or is this just not something that anybody else is doing?
There's a variety of citizen science related directories online from different people, and I think they're all really great, but they all take different aspects. So I think some focus on anything that you can do under the sun of citizen science, whether or not it actually contributes to further scientific discovery or not. There's some projects that are more just about getting you involved in science, but maybe it doesn't tie directly back to something. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of great directories that are a lot wider than what Spacehack is and cover a lot more different areas. And so with Spacehack, it's coming up on, I guess, the the 5-year anniversary, it will be in November. And so we're thinking about like maybe expanding it a bit more to encompass other areas of science.
Now, SpaceHack is, I mean, if I wanted to, I could just sort of sit back and read about all sorts of projects. But you must get a lot of queries from people who say, well, I really like this Milky Way at Home project. Now what do? I want to be part of that. Do you find that you're a facilitator to bring people together?
Sometimes, but really to me, SpaceHack is most successful if people go to the website, find something that interesting, and, you know, go and start participating in it, and then never need to return to the website. So It's kind of more of a portal than anything. I don't think it's SpaceHack.org itself is not the place where people are collaborating. I think it's just really an information resource for people to find things that are interesting more easily and in a more, I guess, readable format, and kind of go off. And then if they never need to return to SpaceHack, then that, I'm happy. That's fine.
You know, for you mentioned that you weren't always obsessed with space or the idea of having people in space when you were growing up. It's something that you fell into and it ended up being a really great fit. I find that my issue is that a lot of these things are very intimidating to me. And I read about it and I go, oh, gosh, that just seems like, I don't know, I'd have to be like a, you know, an astronomer or something.
Yeah.
And that's obviously just not the case.
Yeah.
But so how do you break that barrier, particularly with younger people who still have a lot to learn and could possibly contribute a lot to this kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's something where there's definitely different levels of projects. So, for instance, the University Rover Challenge is challenging college students to build new types of Mars rovers. And while that's really exciting, it might be helpful if you have a little bit more tech skills than the average person in order to do that. But there's other projects like Galaxy Zoo, like Planet Hunters. Planet Hunters is actually really awesome. It's something where it's taking NASA's Kepler data and putting it on the web. And this data is essentially looking at for exoplanets, which are planets around other stars. And it just puts all the data out there and says, do you see any tiny dips in brightness in this curve? And if you do, you might actually be discovering an exoplanet. And it really is as simple as that. So on this webpage where you can see these tiny little white dots, if you can draw a line around where they dip down a bit lower than the rest, you might actually be discovering a new exoplanet. So the level of accessibility for a lot of these projects is quite awesome. And so I think as far as just teaching people that there's not really a barrier there, I think that's something that, you know, is a daily challenge that I work on. I think the thing that I find really sad is that there's a lot of focus about getting children and kids into science and space exploration young, which there definitely should be. But it feels like once you're a young adult and you choose a different career path and it's not science, so the science industry kind of says, well, you chose wrong. You're forever lost to science. Mm. There's nothing you can really contribute at this point. And I'm trying to, I guess, show that that's not really the case, that science and space exploration really needs help from all different types of people. And actually, the best thing, it's less about saying, hey, you should change all of your focus to science and space exploration, and more about saying the skills and mindset that you currently have and perspective you currently bring to the world is actually really useful if applied to space and science, and getting people to realize that it's kind of just another material that they can work with, that it's not this large, yeah, intimidation factor mountain, so to speak.
What do you think? I mean, I guess at least at, you know, like a collegiate level, what would be the solution to something like that? That you don't choose science as a major, it's just incorporated into other areas of study so that people don't feel like you either have to be a scientist or something else?
Yeah, I think that's one option. I think, you know, there's no silver bullet. Everyone's different. I know with myself that I was really obsessed with becoming a designer and one day an executive creative director. And that was like my life goal. And no one could like throw me off that track. Like people could be like, look, space. It's really cool. I'd be like, that's great. I'm focusing on design. You can't change that. But I think the important thing is just making sure that there are a lot of touch points along the way throughout college and after college, especially to kind of show people that if you somehow find something to be really cool and interesting later on, that the door is always open and that it's accessible to you to sort of play around with. And I think that's the biggest tragedy right now is that people don't feel like they can play around with it unless mm-hmm. they know a lot about it. And that's just simply not true. You can play around with space data and science stuff and just even come up with new concepts for rovers, even if you really know very little about science or space exploration. And I think that's the most important thing is breaking down that intimidation factor and saying, no, you can play around with this. You know, you can learn stuff along the way, but you don't have to know a whole lot in order to come up with really awesome ideas that can actually be super clever for changing scientific discovery or scientific processes.
Do you think the, not introduction of privatized spaceflight, but we hear more and more about it. This is something that's happening. We've got companies like SpaceX and Elon Musk who's dedicated, well, he's dedicated himself to all sorts of scientific experiments, but space is a big one up there. Is that better for the community as a whole because we're just talking about it more and it's more of a reality? Or does it kind of, I mean, it definitely is not that open source collaborative thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really excited about what's happening in the space industry. The fact that NASA no longer has a monopoly on space exploration, I think it is really, it seems to be opening people up to the idea that space is and should be more accessible. So I think overall it's really positive to see, and I think it'll be interesting to watch where a lot of these organizations and companies go over the next 10 years or so.
Well, you mentioned science, and SpaceHack is sort of just one of your projects. You also organize something called Science Hack Day, which is not just one day. It's a variety of days all around the globe. And your travel schedule must be ridiculous. So tell us a little bit about what Science Hack Day is.
Yeah, so Science Hack Day is this 48-hour event in which scientists, designers, developers, and all different types of people get into the same physical space to see what they can rapidly prototype with science in 24 consecutive hours. So it's just really around the mission of getting excited and making things with science. And so the very first one was created by Jeremy Keith in London in 2010. And then I brought the first one to San Francisco a few months later that year. And since then, I continue organizing the San Francisco event and then helping sort of instigate and encourage people around the world to create their own Science Hack Days. And it's not really an organization at all. So it's kind of just this grassroots sort of set of guidelines, I guess. And so everyone who creates a Science Hack Day in their own city is able to own it. And it's not really like a top-down franchise sort of thing. And it's just been really amazing. When I organized the first event in San Francisco, I remember being so tired at the end of the first day and so exhausted, but I remember thinking, like, this is the best thing I've probably ever done. Like, it, and just in the seeing, like, how happy and excited everyone was to come together and make things and learn things from one another, it's really, I don't know, it's just amazing to bring together all different types of people and sort of see what happens. It was terrifying the first time because I was worried everyone was not going to like each other or something.
Right, but, right. Yeah, no one's going to come.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, all of that terrifying stuff. But every time, it's just amazing. I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm really excited about it, but it's absolutely the people that come to it that make it so awesome.
Hack Days, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Science Hack Day after we take a quick break. And thank Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode of Triangulation. We all like to learn. I remember a few years ago, I really wanted to be a video editor, and I was a producer, and I didn't know anything about video editing, and my company wouldn't train me. And, I mean, the courses to learn a little Final Cut Pro, they're very expensive. So when I was looking to get my video editing skills up to par, I wish I would have known that Lynda.com was actually around the whole time. I just didn't know about its awesomeness yet. It's an online learning company, so you can learn creative software business skills and achieve your goals. It's not just video editing. There's all sorts of stuff. You know, resume creation, WordPress blogging, app development. I mean, really, anything you're interested in, Lynda.com probably has a cool course for you. There's over 2,000 courses, in fact, and they are adding new courses daily. So there's a lot of great stuff out there, and it's just it's nice to be able to learn things on your own time and have the flexibility to be able to do it online. The instructors are working professionals people at the top of their field. They're expert teachers. The high quality video production makes you feel like you're watching something that's very, very professional. A lot of people who care about the content put it together. It's not like some sort of show and tell thing on YouTube. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is a whole other level of learning. You've got bookmarks and playlists, so if you're really serious about content on Lynda, you can organize your courses into a learning path that's customized for you. And the best part is it is really flexible. You can watch from your computer, on your laptop, on your tablet, your mobile device. And there's searchable transcripts as well. So you can search inside a video, save yourself a little time if you got to go back to a particular type of thing. You can find what you're looking for. And with Lynda, you have a variety of pricing options. You have a one low monthly price of $25 per month that gives you access to the entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. That's exercise files that lets you follow along with the instructor's project as well, using the exact same assets. It's like you're all in a room together. You set your own pace, too, with mobile access. You learn as quickly or as slowly as you want. You can try lynda.com right now for a free 7-day trial. lynda.com/triangulation. Go there to access the entire library. 2,000 courses free for 7 days and see what you can learn. lynda.com/triangulation. And thanks to Lynda for their sponsor of the show. Okay, let's talk more about Science Hack Day. So the first Hack Day you said was in
2010,
and this was something that was organized in London. You heard about it just by chance, or something that you read about online?
Well, the actual way it started was I had organized a panel at South by Southwest about open science, and it was this awesome panel of friends, and we were all talking about how frustrated we were that actually, there was a lot of open science stuff already out there, but no one was really doing anything interesting with it or playing with it or creating interfaces for it. And so we were talking about this frustration, and my friend Jeremy Keith was in the audience and saw this, and he was like, we should do a Science Hack Day. So he created. That's when he created the first one in London, and I was like, that's actually a pretty awesome idea. So I organized the one in San Francisco then.
So what you say, all right, I love the idea of getting a bunch of people who have these great project ideas, or just, you know, they should meet, the meeting of the minds type of a thing. How does one go from that would be a fun 48 hours to actual, I'm going to spread the word? How do you get going from scratch?
Well, I mean, you know, with Hack Days, there was already a format, you know, there was Yahoo Hack Days. And so it felt not too difficult to do.
Is Yahoo the pioneer of the Hack Day?
As far as I know, like, I think they created the first Hack Day, open Hack Day in 2005,
wow,
around there.
Because that's a lot. I mean, the big internet companies all seem to have them now.
Yeah, I think they should probably promote that more. Maybe they'd get more brand traction or something.
Yeah, but, really.
But yeah, I mean, you know, hackathons and Hack Days had been around already, so it was really a matter of figuring out how to take that model and adapt it to what I really wanted to do. And so it was sort of twofold in that not only is Science Hack Day about sort of breaking down the barrier for people to play around with science, and equally to get scientists to realize that there's a bunch of different tools and types of people that they can use to create cool things. But for me, since I'm not a developer, I wanted to make Hack Days actually more accessible to people who weren't programmers. Mm-hmm. And so with Science Hack Day, we have about a third or so are developers, but the rest are kind of a mixed bag of designers and scientists and writers, lawyers, all different types of people. And that's sort of by design, because I would often get frustrated because I really like the idea of creating things, but my skill set is probably fairly low and I'm not a programmer. And I still got really excited about the idea of hacking and Hack Days. So with Science Hack Day, I wanted to create an environment where it was also more accessible for people who have no idea how they could contribute, but get really excited about the idea. And those are exactly the types of people I want to come to it.
Do you find that once everyone's there, it kind of works itself out? People sort of splinter off into groups on their own? Or do you have to maybe group, well, these people would really be able to collaborate better, and then maybe we have another section of people who are actually wanting to build something tangible? How much do you have to guide people along on Hack Day?
It's mostly organic. So we do a number of things before the event. So it's something where we tell people, we encourage people to come up with ideas before the event, but we also tell them it's perfectly fine just to show up and have no idea what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's totally normal. We also, actually later tonight, we're going to have a meetup for all of the people who have signed up so far to sort of meet everyone in person.
Because there's one coming up in San Francisco.
Yeah, in just a couple of weeks. And so today is the sort of a pre-Science Hack Day meetup, so that if you're new and you don't really understand what's going on and you kind of want to get to know people before the event starts, we do that. But mostly as far as team formation, a lot of it's organic. A lot of it's us telling people that it's perfectly fine if you don't find a team within the first several hours. A lot of it's about eavesdropping and just having conversations and hearing what other people are up to. But we do also, you know, make sure to go around as organizers. And if we see someone who's kind of a lone wolf or you know, something, we make sure and have conversations with people and try and get everyone paired up. But more or less, it's kind of all, it just kind of happens, which, as I was mentioning before, I didn't know if it would work that way. But I think we bring enough interesting people from all different areas that it'd be kind of hard to find it boring and be sitting in the corner.
Do you have companies who come to you and want to sponsor these events?
We do have a number of sponsors. So Science Hack Day is completely run by volunteers, and it's free to attend. And so we provide all of the food over the weekend. So we get sponsors each year to mostly just pay for the food for everyone. So we run rather slimly. And so we've had a bunch of great sponsors. If you go to, I guess, sf.sciencehackday.com, we've got all the sponsors this year listed out there. And they've just been really amazing, because I think it's been a slow build to organizations really understanding that that events aren't necessarily always professionally run, that they're more like sort of run by just a group of friends putting together something awesome. And you do have so many awesome outcomes from it and stories from it that that they've been really gracious to help us.
So I'm looking at all of the different cities that have participated in Science Hack Day. They're all over the place. I mean, you've got London, Cape Town, Cincinnati, Nairobi, San Francisco, of course, Birmingham in the UK, not Alabama, Berlin. I mean, are you going to every single one of these?
I go to as many as I can. I haven't been able to attend all of them. I would love to. But I try and go to as many of them as I can. This year, we're inviting, we have a Science Hack Day ambassador program that's really just about getting people from different areas around the world who are interested in organizing a Science Hack Day in their own city to come to the San Francisco event, and then with the idea that they would then take it back to their own city. So this year we are welcoming ambassadors from Madagascar, India, Brazil, Lebanon, Myanmar, and Canada. So in the next few months, hopefully all of those different areas will be having their own Science Hack Days. So it really seems to be having like just a ton of interest from all over the world.
You mentioned that the first time you put together a hack day, you know, you have all these palpitations that it will be a mess, or, you know, people won't do anything, or nobody's going to come, and it's kind of scary. But as you said, it's not just that people are interested, but it's just growing and growing. Does it seem almost like, again, somebody was just sort of waiting for someone like you to say, hey, let's make it a plan. Let's make it a weekend. Let's all come together.
I don't know if anyone ever waits for me, but but I don't know. It's just, as with most projects I do, I just, you know, get excited about doing something, and I organize it and see how it goes, with the expectation that it could just totally flop and maybe I was the only person who found it awesome. So I guess I kind of go about the world just not caring if something's going to be successful or not, and just working on what excites me, and if it's successful, then great. If not, oh well. But I think just seeing Science Hack Day like grow so much and be amazing. I don't know. As I said, it just felt like one of the best things that I've done, just really bringing together all these great people.
Well, and this is arguably also scientific, but you have experience putting, getting groups together with Cupcake Camp.
Yeah.
It's sort of, the skeleton is kind of the same, right?
Yeah.
Get a bunch of people together.
That was also, I didn't intend for that to be successful either.
You really have your finger on the pulse of what people are interested in. Cupcakes, science, space.
Yeah, we'll have to see what the next one is. With cupcakes, that literally started as a joke. It was literally like, you know, it was the tech scene, and like, so there were bar camps all the time, and cupcakes were getting popular.
Right.
And so I was just joking with some friends, oh, what if we combine bar camps and cupcakes, and instead of talks, people brought cupcakes. And it was just a stupid joke. And I was like, oh, we should just try it out. It'll be fun. And I expected like 40 of my friends would show up and that would be it. And then 300 people showed up. And I was like, okay, people are kind of actually interested in this idea.
Right.
So I think this is I don't know, I just get myself into these situations where I do something for fun and then everyone likes it. I'm like, oh, I guess I have to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, you could do like a cronut camp or something. I guess that's the new
thing. Yeah, that would be difficult.
Right. It's hard to find one.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you've got Science Hack Day, and you don't go to every single event, but you're obviously traveling a lot. Well, I mean, do you have a favorite project that's come out of something like this that's gone on to become something? I mean, there's probably some really great ideas that never see the light of day.
Yeah.
But what stands out to you?
Oh, I have so many. My favorite story from a Science Hack Day is, and I mean, I have so many, but this one I really enjoy was, this was, I guess, in our event in San Francisco in 2011. We had this hacker come in, and he wanted to create a device that would essentially tell him when he needed to shave, like, accurately. So he called it the beard detector.
Because he just didn't want it to get too long?
It was weird. Science Hack Day is all about weird stuff. But, this guy, like, hacked together, like, he took this USB microscope and he held it up to his face and it could see the lines on his face. And then he wrote some basic code and used an open computer vision library, and then it could detect the stubble on his face and tell him when he needed to shave. And everyone was like cracking up and like loved this and thought it was amusing. And I thought it was amusing too, but I didn't really know what it had to do with science. I was like, okay, a beard detector, sure.
Right, right.
I guess it uses a microscope. But sitting in the audience and seeing this hack demoed was a particle physicist. And when this particle physicist saw this beard detector being demoed, he said to himself, wow, that's actually a genius way for how to detect cosmic rays in a cloud chamber. And so following Science Hack Day, this particle physicist wrote up this entire proposal for how to detect cosmic rays in a cloud chamber using the original device and code and open computer vision library that this guy had used to detect if he needed to shave or not.
Wow.
And I don't know, I just love that story so much because it's just, that happens in so many instances with Science Hack Day because it's not necessarily about creating something serious that's going to change the world or anything. It's just really about getting excited and making things. And so we have so many people making weird things that we're not even sure like the applications of, but because we have all these different people in the same space, then there's these amazing things that come out of it, like a beard detector leading to a cosmic ray detector, which is just truly odd.
It is. And again, you were sort of like, yeah, this is kind of cool, but maybe not really what I was going for. And then it turns into something that actually becomes pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we don't put limits on anyone. It's really just like whatever you want to do that is tangentially related to science, then go for it. So it's pretty open-ended.
Yeah.
But yeah, some are less science-related than others. But,
yeah.
They're all, I don't know, I love them all. Like, they're just amazing people and stories and things that they create.
So the Hack Day in San Francisco is in a couple weeks, what, the 28th and the 29th?
Yes.
And what does the space look like? If I've never been before and I sort of walk in, I mean, where are we, in a big hall? Are there bean bags, you know, piles of food? What's the general mood?
Yeah, so this year it's definitely going to be a bit different. So this year we are actually having the event at the California Academy of Sciences, which
nice.
Is epic.
And it's a beautiful space.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really huge. So this year will definitely be a little bit more of a challenge for us because we've typically been in like one like office space before or something. And now we have like this huge area. So this time we're going to have a few different spaces that are dedicated for our event, but people can also roam the entire Academy of Sciences, which is going to be amazing. So if you want to work next to the jellyfish or you want to work next to the penguins or
the albino
alligator, then you can do that.
Does he have a name?
Claude, I believe. Yeah.
I like the fact that you're like, yeah, he does.
Yeah. Claude, yeah. You can hang out with Claude so long as you don't disturb him. So it'll be definitely a bit different this year. And I'm really interested to see what it's like, because if I were an attendee, I'd kind of be wondering how I could fit in time to hack and like see the entire museum at the same time, like just because it's so awesome. And we're also working out like something where maybe we'll be able to sort of hack or play with the planetarium overnight. And that's the other cool factor is these Science Hack Days have a sleepover aspect. And this year we get to all sleep over at the California Academy of Sciences. So if you're 18 or over, you can like sleep next to the penguins and the jellyfish and all that stuff, which is, I don't know, I'm really excited about it.
Most people can't say that they've ever done anything like that. Is there a rule about coming and going, or once you come in, do you kind of have to stay?
No, you can kind of come and go. I mean, we obviously want the people who sign up, we want them to like participate over the entire weekend. But if you want to go out and like get hardware supplies or go out into the park and you know, get some sun, whatever, that's fine. I think we close the doors at 8. So if you leave after 8, you won't be able to get in until the next morning.
Right.
But yeah, people can come and go, but we'll have like a few hubs. Like, so we have like a lab area for like most of the hardware hacking, and you know, we've got different rooms sort of situated so that if you don't want to be, I guess, bothered by everyone, by the whole public attendance of the academy,
right?
Then we've got like some rooms that'll be a bit more dedicated for all the Hack Day attendees.
You know, it's probably good timing too, because we're talking about, you know, sleeping over. There's probably a lot of coffee involved. We should probably take a moment to thank Tonks Coffee because they're a sponsor of this episode of Triangulation. I'm just going to, it's a perfect time to put this in here. Tonks, of course, you've heard about Tonks on Twits, a small company made up of a lot of people who care a lot about coffee and think a lot about coffee. T-O-N-X. Is the company. Have you heard of Tonks? If not, you're missing out, because they have really good coffee. In fact, I brewed some Tonks coffee this morning before I did TNT, which I did from home. The nice thing about the beans that Tonks gets is they have a relationship with growers from all over the world. And growing beans is a seasonal thing. There are certain beans that grow in certain regions depending on the time of the year. And, you know, it's just not all coffee is created equal. Not only do the beans have to be sourced from good places, but then there's the whole roasting aspect, that Tonks roasts their beans themselves, and then they ship to you as a customer within 24 hours. That's really important, because stale beans are not the same as fresh beans. Anybody who cares about coffee will know the difference. Homebrewed coffee, by the way, can be awesome. It can be just as good as a cafe. You don't really have to have fancy equipment. It really matters most about the kind of beans that you're getting and if they're nice and fresh. Tonks is a bi-weekly subscription service. So if you sign up, then you get the best beans on earth basically right to your door for the price of a few cafe visits. You get a lot more bang for your buck. If you are going to a cafe more often than not, this is just a better, more economical way to get coffee. And it's just easier. You don't ever have to think about it. By the time you're out of beans, you get your next delivery. Tonks sources directly from growers because of their relationships. They can basically just follow the seasons of beans, select the best beans so that you end up getting them in your cup. And you know, maybe you're all set on coffee. Maybe you don't like coffee, but everybody knows somebody who loves coffee. It would make a really good gift if you're looking for something. Somebody's birthday's coming up. Hey, we got holidays. They're just hard to buy things for. You know that they like coffee. This is perfect. It makes it seem like you know exactly what they want. Why not get them a great cup of coffee every morning? All right, so if you're a coffee connoisseur or you know somebody who is, you should try out Tonks Coffee. These guys are fantastic. It is subscription only, but they're offering a sample to Triangulation viewers and listeners. Tonks.org, TONX.org/triangulation to get some for yourself. Try it out. Free sample. Why not? Or send it to someone you know who appreciates good stuff like good coffee. Tonks.org/triangulation. And thanks to Tonks Coffee for their support of us. All right, so you've got hack days, you've got space hack. I sense a trend. You like collaborating with people. You like the idea of bringing people together. You find that once you get the meeting of the minds, wonderful things can happen. You've probably, especially since your line of work has changed somewhat in the last, 5 years, gotten exposure to a lot of people in the science field that you didn't know before. I find, I mentioned being intimidated earlier, that there is sometimes a big divide between people who are in the science community and people who aren't. Do you ever feel like you get pushback from anybody because you're not technically of, science pedigree?
Yeah, it really depends. I think, I will say over the last 5 years, it's gotten a lot better as both citizen science and hacking and all these different things have become a lot more mainstream, I guess, so to speak. Mm-hmm. People get it now more, also with social media. But it really, it's like anything else. It depends on the person. I will still run into the occasional scientist who's like the very stereotypical, like hates anything new, doesn't appreciate new people coming in and trying new things, but those people are always just, amusing to me.
Because, right.
I mean, I talk with them and I try and understand where they're coming from. I think mostly people have really been embracing, and I think a lot of it is, having confidence in yourself that you have your own perspective and things to sort of add to the conversation that maybe others might not. Mm-hmm. So I think, I'm going to sound so hipster or something, but a lot of it's about being real and being true, knowing who you are and admitting when you don't know things. And, I think a lot of people view me as this amazing space expert, and perhaps I know some things in space that maybe others don't, but there's so much I don't know. Like, I don't have an astrophysics degree. Like, I don't pretend to have one. And so,
right.
So I think, as long as you're true about yourself and where you are, I think you can actually get ahead a lot by saying, like, oh my God, I would love to know more about that. Tell me more. Instead of saying, yeah, I totally understand that equation you just said.
Right, yeah, faking it.
Right, yeah.
So, all right, well, it's good to know that for the most part, this is something that's welcomed by people of various communities coming together. What about the woman aspect of this? Yeah, we hear all the time that women are underrepresented in tech, mm-hmm. certainly underrepresented in the engineering side of tech or the leadership sides of tech. Do you find that there's an issue with that in the science community?
I think every community has, still a ways to go on making progress. But I will say, and this is just only from my perspective, when I walked into NASA for the first day and into the cafeteria at NASA, I was expecting it to be completely male-dominated, and mm-hmm. it wasn't. There were lots of women, and I was actually really surprised because I had totally expected that I was going to be one of the few. And what I discovered is there's tons of women who work at NASA at all different levels, and I think it's great. I think the thing that makes me a bit sad is that there's a lot of women in science and space exploration, but very few of them are founding companies. So if you look at all these new space companies that are starting to be built by all these different, millionaires, billionaires, they're all men. And when mm-hmm. you look at all, they're all men. It's not just like, oh, there's only a few women. It's pretty much all men.
Yeah.
And so I think the thing that has upset me is that I find that there's a lot of women involved in space exploration and science, but very few of them have access to the capital to actually found their own companies. And that's the thing that I find really depressing, because I think people try and say that there's just not enough women involved. And to me, the thing that's sad is for the women that are involved. They just aren't given the access to build their own companies because they don't have the same access to capital that men typically do. So that's the part that I've found a bit upsetting. Like, I would love to see someone create something like what Elon Musk is doing, but be a woman. Mm-hmm. and actually be the founder. So I think that's where it's really lacking right now.
How does that change?
That's a big question.
Save us, Ariel.
Yeah, well, I do not know the perfect answer for that, but I think a lot of it is the societal. I think a lot of it is, even though there's more women getting involved in more things, there's still pay discrepancies, and then there's venture capital discrepancies. I actually read, there was all that like hubbub about TechCrunch going on the last week or two about, not being a great place for, not creating a great environment for women. And I saw a tweet of mine from 6 years ago saying that in the TechCrunch IRC channel, people were talking about how VCs specifically avoided women founders. And so there's just a bunch of I don't know why, but there's just a bunch of crap like that.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to have the answer to how you fix it, but I think it's a large issue. And I think if there was more awareness about it being about the fact that there are women in these fields and you're just not giving them the access that they deserve, as opposed to the what most people hear, which is there's not enough women in X.
Right.
So I think, we do need more women in different disciplines, but pay attention to the women who are already there. Give them access to power the same way other people have access to power. So I think, how you do that, I don't know. But I think a lot of it is changing what we hear as being like, oh, there's just not any women in this area. There are women, and they're just not being paid attention to.
Sure. Living in San Francisco, as you and I have been to countless tech events and startup parties and cupcake camps, and all of that stuff can be really fun, really social. You meet new people. And this is, I've got my little piece of technology that is never far away from me, and I say tech. I love tech. How much do tech and science overlap?
That's something actually that kind of goes to one of my original motivations for bringing Science Hack Day to San Francisco was the fact that you have Silicon Valley, you have like the beginnings of like the electronics industry and the tech industry and the science industry. They're all here. And they both people from both industries think that they're really cool, but there's no social overlap. And I remember being so frustrated because I would have colleagues from NASA. I had a few friends from NASA who went on a tour of Google, and they were like, oh my God, we're at Google. This is so cool. And everyone at Google was like, there's people from NASA here. I was like, there's like this just joy of like, oh my God, how awesome are these people? And yet I don't really know many people from either industry who socially overlap very much. And so with Science Hack Day, I kind of wanted to, if nothing else, build better relationships between these two industries because they're both so similar. They both think each other is cool, but they're being like nerds at like a dance party or something. They're just in the corners and not interacting with one another.
Yeah.
So I really want to help bring together these two different industries of people because they're just amazing. And I think we're a lot worse off if people from these two different industries aren't really connecting much.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Google. I mean, Google is probably a pretty good example as opposed to other large companies, because they have such sort of a science incubator atmosphere that Google is. Sometimes you read about these projects that they're doing in their Google Labs, and it's like, well, that seems a little far flung, but it's pretty cool. And sometimes something like Google Glass is, I mean, it's going to be a real product. Probably would have seemed outlandish just a couple of years ago. What about smaller startups? I mean, should there be more emphasis put on science hacks, that sort of thing, to make actual products that we as consumers end up using better?
I think there's already a lot of interesting things going on. Like Kickstarter, I get really excited whenever I see like weird science projects on Kickstarter. Like there was one for like glowing plants that got overfunded. And I had a friend do one for like a little device that was sort of inspired by Science Hack Day. It was a device that would light up every time the International Space Station was overhead.
That's cool.
And yeah, just I don't know. I think there's already a lot of really cool things. I think I'm always a bit nervous about pushing towards like the startup model, because I think people should only do that if it really makes sense for what they're wanting to do. But mm-hmm. a lot of times, sometimes it's just like doing a Kickstarter, having the product and having something that delights other people as much as it delights them is really awesome to see.
Yeah. What advice do you have for people? You have a lot of experience saying, I've got this great idea. Sometimes it even might start out as sort of like this is half joking and it ends up being a successful event or reoccurring event. Advice for people who just want to do something like this but feel overwhelmed or wouldn't know where to start or how to get the word out.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing you can do is really assemble a group of friends who kind of represent different mindsets. Mm-hmm. And so ideally it shouldn't be a one-person job. If you want to do it on your own, like Jeremy Keith, when he did the one in London, he mostly did that on his own. But I think, you know, when I was doing the San Francisco one, I wanted to have friends who were from different areas of science. So I recruited my friend Ari Gentry, who is a lot more connected to bio people than I am. And I recruited a bunch of different friends who I thought were really cool, but they have no interest in science. And I wanted to sort of assemble a group of friends to help me organize the event that represented the different types of people that I would love to have attend. And then together, collectively, we kind of just put it together. The first event we organized very much on a super low budget, and it was just, you know, it's a hack day. It's not a professional conference. So, yeah. You know, if things are hacked together, if it's a little, like, informal and you know, scrapped together, then that's fine, because that's kind of the nature of it. And again, it's really just the people who make it. So a lot of the effort should be not only on having like a core group of friends help you run it, but also to think about the different types of people you want there and individually invite them. So we do really care a lot about diversity and getting enough women and enough scientists and people without science backgrounds, and we try and balance it. And so a lot of that is through, you know, reaching out to people, sending them individual invites, saying that we would specifically like them to attend, doing your research, reach out to some people you already know, reach out to people you've only heard of. Mm-hmm. I find that to be the best thing. And, you know, with Science Hack Day, it's always like an effort, because I think this year's event, I was just checking the numbers the other day, were about 40% women attendance, which is great, but I always push for 50% if possible. We haven't hit 50% yet, but I think, you know, the thing that makes the event great is these individual invites and trying to, as best you can, talk with each attendee one-on-one so that they feel like they have a connection to the people running the event. So a lot of it's just about being a good person, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Good intentions, follow through.
Yeah.
Head counts.
Yeah.
Have enough food.
Yeah.
Have you found of being able to experience how a hack day comes together in a variety of different cities around the world? Are there certain hack days that have just really stood out as, wow, that was this, Berlin is where it's at, or Nairobi, it could not be better? Certain places that, we mentioned Silicon Valley as the hub of all things science and tech, but where else on earth does this seem to flourish?
Yeah, well, I don't know, each city has their own flavor, and that's what I've really loved to see. So I was able to attend the Science Hack Day in Kenya and one in South Africa and the Chicago one, and they were all awesome in their own ways. Like with the one in Nairobi, it was a lot of college kids and kind of like refining their skills, and I think one of the winners at that hack day was a 15-year-old girl who had built like this robot, which was just amazing. But yeah, each city is just I don't know. I definitely don't have a favorite, but one city I was impressed about because they seem to have like all the right people already living there was Dublin. Mm. Dublin, and I haven't actually even attended the event, but it seems like there's already so many sort of science hacker-like activities happening in Dublin, which is awesome to see. They have this great place called the Science Gallery, which is essentially a gallery art space for science-related art and interactive art, and it's just amazing. And so you've already got, like, robotics clubs and artists and scientists already collaborating together a lot. So I remember being a bit impressed with that city just because they seem to already be doing Science Hack Day like things on their own, even without the event. So
yeah,
it was kind of cool. But in all these other cities I've attended, it's just been amazing. Like in Chicago, we got to hack the planetarium and play around with that. And people just made amazing things, and they were really dedicated. And in South Africa, you had a bunch of different people come together. It was hosted at sort of like a mathematics university, and and people were making like weird wristwatches that like made music based on like your movements. And I don't know. I like they've all been amazing, but they all are slightly different based on the types of people that they want to have attend and the type of local communities that they have to pull from.
Yeah. It's funny when you mention something like a wristwatch and music, and I just sort of go, that just sounds like a creative person to me. I mean, that person might not even identify with being part of the science community.
Yeah.
So there has to be, I guess there's some sort of an educational thing as well to say, listen, you don't have to like this particular, you don't have to ever want to look at an organism at a cellular level type.
Right,
it doesn't have to be about that, or it might be,
because
science is, it's such a far-reaching term.
Yeah, and I think people, another assumption people make about me is that I think, like, all science is interesting, and I find, like, a lot really interesting, but there's stuff that's really boring. There's stuff that, like, I look at, I'm just like, it's going to bore me to tears.
And, sure.
And so I think,
like
you know,
things in life.
I think, again, a lot of it's just being, you know, honest and real with people, and yeah, if I find that, you know, people who are really into biotech aren't that interested by space exploration sometimes.
Right, right.
And equally, people into space exploration aren't that interested in biotech or aren't that interested in neuroscience. So everyone has their own thing that gets them, like, super excited. And so I'm not trying to convince people that, like, this is really exciting and you've just been too stupid to realize it. Like, that's not it at all. It's more like just, you know, finding things that people get excited about and telling them that it's accessible or telling, you know, people that if they want to dream up of different ways to do, you know, something in biotech, even though they don't know much about it, that they can do that as long as they're excited about it. So yeah, if it's a wristwatch that makes music based on your movements and it actually, like, incorporates, like, the physics of your body, then yeah, go for it. You know, you don't have to find all the other, you know, looking at cellular organisms to be interesting. You know, I don't know. It's just about having fun.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I think it's absolutely healthy to spread the message that science is fun. So, space. What excites you most about how far we've come as far as space exploration and what the future may hold?
That's a big question also. Like everything. I think there's just so many interesting things that are going on. You know, obviously there's like the making space exploration more accessible, both in human spaceflight and just space exploration in general. I think it's really interesting to watch that play out and watch that sort of grow into like a greater citizen science renaissance over the next 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But in space exploration itself, there's just so many amazing things happening. There's a space probe I'm excited about called Juno, which is going to Jupiter to better understand like what the hell is in Jupiter, because we don't know that much about it.
Yeah.
As a lot of people saw, Voyager 1 officially-ish left the solar system, according to NASA. That's just really exciting. There's increasing black hole research, which I'm always fascinated by. I don't know. There's just so much. I think the thing that's going to be really interesting and difficult to understand throughout time is the concept of multiverses, and that's something that a lot of astrophysicists are looking at, the idea that there's more than just one universe.
Yeah.
And it's a really difficult concept because it's something where people are beginning to think that there are multiverses increasingly, not because they want to believe that there's more, but that a lot of the science is pointing to the
that
idea.
Being the case.
Yeah, that might be the case. The only problem is we might not ever be able to detect it because there's a bunch of different models it could be, but it could be that, you know, if our universe is everything we could ever detect ever, how would we detect a multiverse?
Yeah.
So people have theorized on different ways in which you could actually do this, but the reality could be that we would never be able to detect it, and then that would be a very awkward way of teaching space exploration moving forward, that we live in a multiverse, but we don't have any evidence or we don't have any direct detection, so to speak. So I don't know. There's a lot of interesting stuff with space, and I do find it interesting to look at how little it is that we've known and how much we know now just in the last 100 years, because 100 years ago we thought the Milky Way galaxy was the only galaxy in the entire universe, that we were it, that maybe there was some other stuff on the edge, but we were pretty much it. And now we know there are billions and billions of galaxies. So it hasn't even been 100 years since we knew that there was anything in our universe but our own galaxy. So I get really excited about, like, deep space stuff and stuff yeah. that is really, like, on the straddling, like, what we know and don't know.
Mm-hmm. Would you go to space? Would you go to Mars if somebody said, we've got a seat for you, Ariel, let's go?
Yeah, I think that's something where I've always felt a bit hesitant. I think, you know, I've had the privilege of getting to meet a number of astronauts so far, and they're amazing, but when you look at it, there's a lot of health issues that you encounter mm-hmm. a lot. And it's something where, admittedly, like, I feel like if you have anyone that you love here on Earth, that it's actually a really difficult decision, because yeah. if it's not like, oh, you might die when you go, but it's all the health issues you might experience when you get back and how that might affect your longevity. So I think it's a lot more serious than I think people make it out to be, because everyone's like, yeah, go to space and it'd be cool.
Right.
But if you spend any decent amount of time there, you know, there's cardiac problems, there's eye problems, mm. radiation and all sorts of things. And they take a toll. So I'm not sure if I would be up for that. But, you know, there's different companies that are looking at suborbital space flights where you're only in space for, you know, 6 minutes or so, and then you come back down. So yeah. those might be more okay.
Sure.
Yeah, because you're not getting, like, the huge dose of radiation and all the other aspects.
Or you could just do it like a space jump, get it sponsored by Red Bull or something.
That
like
wasn't
that.
Technically space.
Right. Exactly. It was pretty cool.
It was near space. But yeah, near space. I don't think I would do that. I'm not the skydiving type.
Like, right, right.
There's also these planes that are called the vomit comets that do the, I can't pronounce it, the flights that go up and down and essentially create like zero G for mm-hmm. like a few minutes. And people have asked me about that. And I've always been like, if I'm going to vomit, like, I better be in space.
Right.
Not on a plane. Yeah.
The last thing you need after something like that is to be like, I didn't quite get all the way up there. I can't actually say that I was in space. Yeah. Well, we're coming up actually on the end of our hour. You're obviously very busy. You've got your Science Hack Day coming up in San Francisco. You're running Space Hack. What else? What's next? What's next for you? What does the rest of your year look like?
Well, the rest of my year looks a little bit slower, which I'm actually really excited about, because mm-hmm. I definitely hit like a peak this year of, you know, I like being really busy and kind of having a crazy travel schedule, but I think there were times where I'm like, this is a little too crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to things dying down a little bit towards the end of the year. But one thing I'm hoping for, it's not definite, but I applied for my very first NSF grant, which is the National Science Foundation grant, mm-hmm. A few months ago, and I applied to try and go to Antarctica.
Wow.
So it's something that I would love to do. I guess for me, it's my version of going to space. It's going to Antarctica. I'm in the waiting period to see if I got that or not. But
if you did, yeah. would you be there for an extended period of time?
I said I would be there maybe 3 or 4 weeks, so not too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to go. I'm not getting my hopes up because it's notoriously super difficult to get a grant from the NSF.
Yeah.
But it might be something where maybe if I don't get it this time, maybe I'll find other ways of going. But I don't know. I just think it's really amazing from a space science perspective. There's a lot of interesting stuff that they're doing down there about, measuring like neutrinos and all these different like space astrophysics things that get me really excited. And then you get to also say you went to Antarctica, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, how can people keep up with everything that you're doing online? If you get your grant, if you start some other project, how can people follow you?
ArielWaldman.com, or I'm Ariel Waldman on Twitter. That's probably the easiest ways. And then SpaceHack is spacehack.org, and Science Hack Day, to find out more about how you could organize one or attend one, is sciencehackday.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us for a triangulation. This was really, really fun. Obviously, as Ariel mentioned, spacehack.org is where you can get more information than you've ever dreamed of. Or maybe you're already familiar with it. You can tell a friend. Or, of course, Science Hack Day. There's the San Francisco version of it coming up in just a couple weeks at the Academy of Arts and Sciences, which is...
California Academy of Sciences.
California Academy of Sciences. Thank you. Which is, even though I can't pronounce it, a very beautiful space if you're in the area. Definitely consider joining up. Sounds like it's going to be a fun event, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. This has been Triangulation. Filling in for Lee LaPorte, I'm Sarah Lane, and we'll see you next week.